Well, hello there. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. While on holiday in Italy's Veneto region late July, Pope Benedict XVI called once again for an end to all wars, saying they were useless slaughters, specifying they bring hell to paradise on earth. On that occasion, the Pope recalled that 90 years ago,
giusto 90 anni or sono,
on August the 1st, 1917,
il primo agosto 1917,
his predecessor to the See of Peter, Benedict XV, urged a similar end to the First World War.
Il mio venerato predecessore, Papa Benedetto XV,
using the words useless slaughter. As we know, our Holy Father took the name Benedict inspired by the great wartime pontificate of that other Pope Benedict. That's why I'd like you to join me as I take you back in time, bringing you the witness of some of those who remembered Pope Benedict XV, or people I interviewed some time back.
I had come to Rome from London, in fact, because my father was a diplomat and was in London when the war broke out and was called up and then wounded at Gallipoli and then posted here. And my mother joined him with my nanny, who was
a... Father John Charleroux was only a child in those days, but he remembered the Roman scene very clearly. Children, he told me, are very sensitive to atmospheres.
In those times, the Italian capital was very much keeping the Vatican in the background. One didn't speak much of the Vatican. We had family connections with the black people, the people of the Vatican, but one knew that it wasn't in keeping with the new mode. The relations between the black aristocracy, all, even the priests, and the Italian state were... Well, it was incompatible to have to make the mix. For instance, my mother told me about an occasion where they were invited to a ball at the embassy of Argentine to the Holy See. They were dining.
The lavish ball at the Argentinian embassy to the Holy See, Father Charleroux told me about, took place during the latter years of Pope Benedict XV's pontificate, shortly after the end of the First World War.
Well, come with us. My father and mother were invited, and they all went. And when one of the guests entered that Argentine embassy, which was in Palazzo Cencibronetti, where the Democristian Party is now, there was, as if the devil had appeared in the room. It was because among those guests of Countess Lovatelli was one of the sons of Garibaldi. And he didn't know where his hostess was leading him. When he noticed that he was in the Argentine embassy to the Holy See, he withdrew immediately. Nevertheless, the scandal was such that the ambassador had to be recalled by his government. So it gives you the tone of the relationship between the black world and the white world of the Savoys.
When Italy was made a kingdom, the Pope was deprived of his possessions and his sovereignty. And some Roman families who were devoted to him for centuries refused to join the new state of things, and they even closed the gates, the doors.
Count Carlo Cardelli belonged to one of those families who, from one generation to another, had served the popes. They were known as black families simply because the women who belonged to these families went to the Vatican court wearing black veils, while the Savoy families wore white veils.
In January sometime, as the representatives of the ancient nobility of the city of Rome, distinguishing them from the princely and feudal houses. My grandfather, Alessandro, went to in the Vatican Gardens to keep company to the whole, to Pope Pius IX, as many other gentlemen from the Roman nobility did. and inform him about what was going on in the town and the society. And unfortunately, he doesn't refer in his diaries what the Pope told to him or what he did say to the Pope. But anyhow, the fact remains that the Pope was happy to receive news from the outside when he was a prisoner in the Vatican.
Contacts between the Vatican and the homes of the black aristocracy were frequent and familiar. While his grandfather told the Count of his walks with Pope Pius IX in the Vatican Gardens back in 1876, his grandmother told him about young Monsignor della Chiesa, the future Pope Benedict XV's visits to his family home as a young diplomat. Can you remember anything about him?
Well, I know that as a Monsignore, he came to see my grandmother very frequently, and this he remembered when he saw one or the other from my family.
Can you remember any gossip that went round about him?
The Vatican chamberlains were called camerieri segreti. Secret means intimate. So once the Pope, Benedict XV, asked one of these camerieri segreti to comply with some very confidential task. And he said, remember that this must be a secret, because if you're not a secret, you will remain only a cameriere, a waiter.
The Count certainly picked up a little gossip about Pope Benedict XV, but had no knowledge of a legend about him keeping wolves in the Vatican Gardens.
I heard a rather curious story that Benedict kept two wolves in the Vatican Garden. Now, I've talked to the family, the Della Chiesa family, and they say categorically that they don't remember this at all.
He said to
him, while the Della Chiesa family firmly denied this alleged eccentricity, they allowed Pope Benedict XV's biographer, John Pollard, access to family correspondence. John Pollard discovered a more human side to the seemingly rather misunderstood Pope.
Antonio was quite ill. I've read the correspondence which the Della Chiesa family have kept, and he was very close in terms of correspondence, very affectionate, very concerned about his family. I mean, there are some very interesting, very nice letters. He showed concern about the details of their lives, and particularly he was very concerned about his brother Giovanni Antonio, who sadly died shortly after he came to Rome. His predecessor, Pius X, used to have his sisters, all three of them, in the palace two or three times a week, and they used to have a glass of wine together, and they used to say the rosary together, and I imagine they had a good gossip together. Benedict XV was slightly more distant from his family, though his family did come to live in Rome. Curious, he was very English. I mean, he was Genoese, and he had a very common, sensible approach to life.
This common-sense approach to life surfaced both at a political and a practical level during what was to be a wartime pontificate.
If I had to remember one thing about him, it would be that he tried to stop the First World War, and he tried repeatedly and persistently. He issued the famous peace note in August 1917. It was a peace plan for a negotiated peace without cessions of territory, without great reparations. It was basically an attempt to go back to the status quo. But above all, it was an attempt to stop the war. The other side of the coin of Benedict's trying to stop the war was a huge humanitarian effort which he made. I mean, he set up almost a second Red Cross in the Vatican, a prisoners of war bureau, searching for missing prisoners of war, literally thousands, and we're talking about thousands and thousands, bringing prisoners of war, particularly sick and wounded prisoners of war, civilian internees out of occupied countries, taking them to Switzerland, and providing prodigious amounts of money to relieve starvation in Germany because of the blockade, and also in Eastern Europe generally, including Armenia and parts of Russia. So, I mean, it was a quite extraordinary humanitarian effort that the Vatican conducted during the First World War.
Pope Benedict XV may have been more successful in his humanitarian efforts than in his peace efforts, but the political scene in those years was one of exasperated nationalism, as Father Charles Leroux explained.
We were rather passionately nationalist in those where the British called the German the Huns, the French called the German the Bosch. There was a real kind of passion. And, of course, London and Rome were keen, it's always like that, on getting the Catholic propaganda system on their side. Alas, they forgot that the relations of France with the Vatican had not been good, all the fault being on the French side. The French governments were very not only anti-Catholic, anti-Christian, were persecuting the Catholic schools and so on. On the English side, well, Catholicism is not exactly the religion of the nation, but on our enemy's side, on the side of the empires, you had the great Catholic power, which was Austria-Hungary, and you had in the German Empire, nevertheless, some Catholic states, which were the Kingdom of Bavaria, the Kingdom of Saxony, all the Rhine Valley, and the relations with those powers were much more favorable to Christianity and Catholicism than was our side.
The war that Pope Benedict XV had fought so hard to stop finally ended 4 years into his pontificate at the 11th hour of the 11th day of November 1918, leaving 40 million dead. All over Europe, people danced joyfully in the streets. Buses were driven at random through flag-waving crowds. In the Vatican, Pope Benedict XV rejoiced. His war pontificate was over. Since 1914, he'd written 3 encyclicals about peace, and while the young men who'd survived the horrors of war were returning home, he began writing another encyclical about the children who'd been victims of that great war. Meanwhile, Papal Rome came to life. In the various embassies to the Holy See, they'd almost doubled during the war years, dust was being removed from chandeliers in the ballrooms, invitations sent out, exclusively to the black aristocracy, of course. The Roaring Twenties were about to begin.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that programme focusing on the figure of Pope Benedict XV.
Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.